conflict between Moscow and Kiev. And Palestinian resistance groups vowed to respond to Israeli brutalities after regime forces killed yet another young Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mnis. Thanks for joining us. The French satellite operator Eutelsat has taken the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting off the air. The operator says its move to cease its activities with IRIB is under a European Union regulation passed earlier this month. The EU has imposed sanctions on dozens of Iranian individuals and several entities over the country's response to the recent riots. Eutelsat informed Tehran that it would remove Iranian channels, including English-language press TV, shortly after the ban was announced. Tehran has strongly condemned the decision, saying the move further reveals the true colors of false advocates of freedom of expression and the free flow of information. Meanwhile, Europe continues to host TV channels which foment violence and terrorism inside of Iran. We've talked to university professor and political analyst Said Mohammad Morandi about Eutelsat's decision to remove the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting from its airwaves. He says that the move is aimed at preventing the voices of Iranian people from being heard across the globe.
The Europeans have sanctioned IRIB many times, and this was just the last of a series of sanctions that they've imposed. And the same is true with the United States. They've also imposed sanctions on IRIB. So the Europeans and the Americans have a long, long history of preventing Iranian voices from being heard in the West and also across the world, because their sanctions, their financial sanctions targeting Iranian radio and television, including sanctions that target ordinary businesses, the imports of medicine and medical supplies, among other things. All of these sanctions have a specific intention, not just to break Iranian society and kill people and hurt ordinary people, but also to silence the population. And it's not just Iran. Increasingly, the Europeans and Americans are sanctioning all voices that go beyond the boundaries of the official narrative. And we see that also through big tech, how people's accounts have been deleted. Millions of accounts have been deleted over the years, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Iran's intelligence ministry says it has arrested four groups linked to the Israeli spy agency Mossad that were operating across the country. In a statement, the ministry said members of the groups are trying to carry out hybrid terror attacks across Iran using the recent riots in the country. The ministry said it has also gotten clues about the operative head of Mossad affiliates in a European country and will later announce the details. Recently, some Western countries have used the riots in Iran as a pretext to interfere in the country's affairs. Tehran says the West has instigated the riots and unrest, helping anti-Iran terror groups in a hypocritical way. Tehran has repeatedly rejected the West's criticism of its response to rioting, saying that any government is obliged to fight terrorism, violence, and hate speech. An investigation based on Twitter's internal files has revealed that the social media platform helped the U.S. military amplify its online propaganda campaigns about its activities in West Asia. The probe says Twitter granted Pentagon-affiliated accounts more visibility, even allowing fake accounts to push pro-U.S. narratives. At the top of the campaign's agenda was spreading criticism of Iran and showing support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen.
An investigation has shed light on the complicity of social media giant Twitter in the propaganda of the U.S. military in the West Asia region. The investigation says Twitter helped the U.S. military amplify its propaganda campaigns in this region, allowing fake accounts to push pro-U.S. narratives. The probe has been carried out by a journalist and is based on internal documents released by Elon Musk, who took over as Twitter's CEO in October. Musk has released the documents as an effort to boost transparency about the social media platform's operations under the previous management. The investigation says Twitter secretly created a special whitelist exempting accounts run by U.S. Central Command or CENTCOM for spam and abuse flags. The move allowed those accounts greater visibility on the platform. It says Twitter quietly introduced the feature in 2017. The measure was introduced after U.S. military officials asked the company to improve the visibility of Arab language accounts used to amplify certain messages. Those included promoting U.S. military narratives, anti-Iran messages, and support for the U.S. and Saudi-backed war in Yemen. According to the report, CENTCOM concealed its ownership of the accounts. In some cases, it used fake pictures and bios to give them the impression that they were run by civilians in the region. The social media giant tolerated the presence of the accounts on the platform until at least May 2022.
Investigation says the collusion between Twitter and the U.S. military continued until at least May of this year. Twitter has long pledged to shut down all state-backed disinformation and propaganda campaigns. For example, in the year 2018, Twitter suspended accounts that were allegedly linked to Russia. But these rules and suspensions have not been applied to the American military.
Twitter has long pledged to shut down all state-backed disinformation and propaganda efforts. For example, in 2018, Twitter suspended accounts that were allegedly linked to Russia's propaganda efforts. But these rules and suspensions have not been applied to the American military efforts.
And the story also looks at the kind of hypocritical promises and pledges by Twitter. Twitter, since 2016, has promised to crack down on state-backed influence operations, to shut down covert propaganda, and they brag all the time about shutting down Russian or Venezuelan or even Thai secret Twitter accounts that are run by the military.
Azerbaijani.
Yeah, Azerbaijan. Yeah, Azeris are always doing this as well. Yeah. But really, the U.S. is doing this. And Twitter, even though they promised to shut down all state-backed influence operations, they've worked hand in glove with the U.S. military, giving them special privileges for their fake Twitter accounts, these fake personalities that kind of make organic-looking conversations in Yemen or Syria or Iraq.
The finding of this research appeared to corroborate a major report published in August by online security researchers affiliated with the Stanford Internet Observatory. That report claimed that thousands of accounts that they suspected to be part of a state-backed information operation. It said many of those accounts used photorealistic human faces generated by artificial intelligence and were connected with an online ecosystem that included fake news websites, meme accounts on Telegram and Facebook, and online personalities. They all echoed Pentagon messages and included anti-Iran messages. Some of them accused Iran of threatening Iraq's water security. Others promoted allegations that Iran was harvesting the organs of Afghan refugees. In the summer of 2020, officials from Facebook reportedly identified fake accounts attributed to CENTCOM's influence operation on his platform. Reports show in 2020, Facebook and Twitter executives were invited by the Pentagon's top attorneys to attend classified briefings in a sensitive, compartmented information facility. The result of that meeting was that many of the fake accounts remained active for at least another year. Some of the accounts on the CENTCOM list remain active even now.
The U.S. president has announced another batch of military assistance to Ukraine as the war between Kiev and Moscow shows no signs of letting up.
Today, I'm announcing the next tranche of our security assistance to Ukraine, $1.85 billion package of security assistance that includes both direct transfers of equipment to that Ukraine needs, as well as contracts to supply ammunition Ukraine will need in the months ahead for its artillery, its tanks, and its rocket launchers.
Biden added that Washington is committed to ensuring that Ukraine can defend itself against Russia for as long as it takes. He also claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin has no intention of ending the war with Ukraine. Biden made the comments at a joint news conference with his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky, who later on, in an address to U.S. Congress, expressed his gratitude to Washington for its support. Zelensky expressed hope that U.S. lawmakers will continue to support Ukraine on a bipartisan basis. Meanwhile, Russia reacted to Washington's announcement of further military aid to Kiev. Kremlin said that U.S. supplies of Patriot missile systems to Ukraine would not contribute to settling the conflict and would not prevent Russia from achieving its goals. Musk added that there had been no signs of preparations for peace talks during Zelensky's visit to the U.S., which it said were indications that the White House was fighting a proxy war with Russia. Moscow further said it heard nothing that could signal readiness to address Russia's concerns. Washington correspondent Colin Campbell joined us earlier to tell us more about the new U.S. military aid package and Washington's pledge of long-term support for Ukraine.
This $2 billion is just an assistance package for the focus of this Patriot missile system that Zelensky has been asking for a while. But the U.S. is also poised to pass another $45 billion in aid. It's not 100% sure that it will be passed, but that's what's been pledged. And it'll be part of a nearly $2 trillion omnibus spending package by the Congress. So this is not just the last in aid, this nearly $2 billion, not quite a $2 billion, but nearly $2 billion that that Ukraine will actually receive from the U.S., but it's just part of billions, another tens of billions of dollars coming from the U.S. As he pledged more aid, Zelensky thanking American families, Americans themselves, politicians, really in some ways ingratiating himself to America because he knows that he will depend on them if he needs military support in the future. Not only that, we do have a change in Congress coming up in mid-January when all of the new politicians will have been sworn in after winning their elections. And that's the makeup of Congress will be a little bit different. Instead of having the Democrats run the House and the Senate, the Republicans will be the ones in charge of the House. Democrats held on to the Senate in this past election. So that means that Zelensky will have to appeal to Republicans this time if he expects to get continued aid. There's already some skepticism coming from conservatives and Republicans on how much the U.S. is spending in Ukraine.
France's privacy watchdog says it has fined the U.S. tech giant Microsoft 60 million euros for forcing cookies on users. The National Commission for Technology and Freedom said Microsoft search engine Bing deposits cookies on its terminal without users' consent. The watchdog added that cookies are used for advertising purposes. Meanwhile, Microsoft has been given 3 months to rectify the issue, with a potential further penalty of 60,000 euros per day overdue. This is not the first time that a U.S.-based tech firm has been fined for the breach of privacy. Last year, Google and Facebook were sanctioned by French privacy watchdog and fined 210 million euros. The cost of living crisis, coupled with rising inflation, is taking a heavy toll on Britain's economy. New official data shows that the country's economy contracted in the third quarter more than it was estimated. According to the Office for National Statistics, GDP dropped 0.3% in the July to September period, up 0.1% estimated previously. The fall in manufacturing and production has been blamed for the contraction. Figures also show that the country is lagging further behind other advanced economies. It comes as Britain is already teetering on the brink of a recession amid sky-high inflation that rose at the fastest rate in 40 years in May. A wave of strikes across the country since the summer has also impacted growth. People are fed up with the government's failure to raise their wages to keep pace with inflation. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the Israeli killing of a young Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank. Hamas paid homage to 23-year-old Ahmed Atef Mustafa Darahema, who lost his life during an Israeli raid on the city of Nablus. The movement also praised the Palestinians for their resistance against the occupying regime in the occupied territories. Hamas said the blood of martyrs will not go in vain and will only serve as a catalyst for further resistance. Separately, the Islamic Jihad movement has warned that Israel's continued crimes and terrorist activities would not provide security to the regime. It has vowed to respond to Israeli brutalities. The new fatality increases the number of Palestinians killed this year by Israeli forces to 224, including 53 in the besieged Gaza Strip. Of course, correspondent Ramallah Mona Kandil joined us earlier to tell us more about what exactly unfolded during Israel's latest raid on the occupied city of Nablus.
The raid this night was to the eastern part of the Nablus city, where dozens of Israeli Jewish settlers raided Joseph's tomb, in Arabic, the Yusuf, Qabil Yusuf in Nablus, escorted, of course, by Israeli forces. This dump is located inside Area A, under full Palestinian control, and the Israeli settlers, the Israeli forces are prohibited from raiding the area. Despite this, every month, at least twice, Israeli settlers raid the area because they consider it's a holy site for them. Clashes erupted between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli soldiers. At the end of the day, Palestinians received nothing from the international community but statements of condemnation and, let's say, calls, just calls to the Israeli regime to stop their crimes committed against the Palestinians and the illegal policies practiced as well. But at the end of the day, the Israeli regime know very well that these condemnations would not turn into sanctions or acts against it. That's why they continue their aggression.
The UN Security Council has adopted the first ever resolution on Myanmar that calls on the military junta to release all political prisoners, including Aung San Suu Kyi. The 15-member council adopted the draft with 12 votes in favor and 3 abstentions, including China, Russia, and India. The resolution also demands an immediate end to all forms of violence and urges all parties to respect human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the rule of law. Earlier attempts to adopt a resolution on Myanmar failed due to divisions among council members. The Myanmar's military seized power in February of last year over alleged voter fraud during the 2020 elections. It suspended the government of then de facto ruler Suu Kyi, arrested her, and unleashed a widespread crackdown on pro-democracy protests. Later, a junta court sentenced Suu Kyi to 26 years in prison on different charges, including corruption. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. The UN Office of the High Commissioner on Human Rights has issued a press release detailing the views of its experts on the Zionist regime treatment of the Palestinians during the past year, which they say has seen the worst death rate among the occupied population since the organization began systematically tracking fatalities in 2005. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote, "The experts rebuked the Zionist regime for the excessive use of force deployed by Israeli regime forces against Palestinians and the unbridled violence of Israeli squatters or settlers on Palestinian land in the West Bank, which have left 150 Palestinians dead this year in the occupied West Bank, including 33 Palestinian children. In addition, armed Israeli squatters have killed two or possibly three Palestinians this year." The experts issued a joint statement saying, "We remind Israel that pending dismantlement of its unlawful occupation, Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territory must be treated as protected persons, not enemies or terrorists." Quite the opposite, they pointed out that Israeli regime officials have the responsibility under international law to attend to the security and welfare of the occupied population. Fanatical Zionist squatters who have built on land owned by Palestinian families and walk around armed are a particular concern for UN human rights experts. They said armed and masked Israeli settlers are attacking Palestinians in their homes, attacking children on their way to school, destroying property and burning olive groves, and terrorizing entire communities with complete impunity. Worse, there are credible reports of Israeli troops actually helping the squatters commit mayhem on Palestinians. The experts observed disturbing evidence of Israeli forces frequently facilitating, supporting, and participating in settler attacks makes it difficult to discern between Israeli settler and violence. They added, "The impunity of one is reinforced by the impunity of the other. Each year has been more Israeli squatter attacks than the year before since 2016. Ironically, it was in 2016 that the UN Security Council had passed a resolution demanding an end to such Israeli regime squatting. There is something horribly wrong with the Zionist regime military rules of engagement, which are producing this high death toll among Palestinians. The experts point out that occupation troops can only deploy firearms against persons from the occupied population when the latter pose an imminent threat to life. That is, you can't just shoot down unarmed people, and you can't shoot someone in the head who has been taken down and immobilized, regardless of what he had been doing up to that point. The experts warn that these cavalier approaches to taking human life may amount to extrajudicial execution, a violation of the right to life, and willful killing prohibited under the Fourth Geneva Convention and Rome Statute. Ultimately, the experts say it is the Israeli determination to colonize the Palestinian West Bank that is driving this drumbeat of violence against the indigenous population. illegal settlement poses a corrosive threat to Israeli society as a whole, and unless Israeli forces abandon this dominant settler mindset and rightfully treat Palestinians in the occupied territory as protected persons, Israel's deplorable record in the occupied West Bank will likely deteriorate further in 2023. No peaceful settlement can be pursued under Israel's repressive occupation, a reality that should be a wake-up call for all decision-makers. Their expectation that the lives of Palestinians are about to get harder, though they did not say so, is justified by the formation of the most far-right-wing extremist government in the Zionist history, which cabinet members who are themselves illegal squatters on a stolen Palestinian land and who champion more such theft. The experts issuing this statement are Francesca Albines, a special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, Maurice Tibal-Binns, a special rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary executions, and Clement Vaul, special rapporteur on freedom of peaceful assembly and association. Ms. Albines has a law degree from the University of Pisa and a Master of Law in Human Rights from London University, SOAS. She is finishing a PhD in International Refugee Law at Amsterdam University School of Law. An affiliated scholar at the Institute for the Study of International Migration at Georgetown University, Albanese is the author of Palestinian Refugees in International Law, Oxford UP 2020. Her highly knowledgeable critique of Israeli regime occupation policies towards the Palestinian has led to a smear campaign against her, predictably and pitifully attempting to depict her concern for the rights of Palestinians as a form of bigotry towards Jews.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam economized when it came to spending upon himself. He lived a rather ascetic, simple lifestyle. But His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spent a great abundant amount of wealth on the poor and the needy people amongst the Muslims. And it is precisely because of this unequaled and unparalleled generosity that Imam al-Jawad has been called and titled al-Jawad, the generous. This surname was the most particular and famous surname of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, to the extent that he was well known and famous for it amongst the people.
Parts of Ziyarah text of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ayyuha an-nur as-safi. As-salamu alayka ayyuha al-badr al-talim.
Peace be upon you, O shining light. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are humbly talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Now, dear friends, one of the titles of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali is, of course, al-Jawad. But another one of his well-known titles is At-Taqi. And we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was the purest person in his era, especially during his imamat. We find that His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam had beautiful conversations with the people around him. Now, of course, he lived in an era where moral corruption was at a very high level. And we also see that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam lived in an era where the Abbasid political establishment was usurping the power and the wealth of the common Muslims. Heavy taxes were laid upon the people to the extent where many could not pay this heavy burden of taxes. But on the other hand, not only were the taxes very high upon the common masses, but we also find that the political establishment of the Abbasids, they would not distribute the public treasury as it should be. So what happened naturally was that the political establishment of the Abbasids continued to become richer and richer, while the common masses of the Muslims continued to become poorer and poorer. It is in such a financially and economically corrupted and messed up environment that we find Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam had to put forth the true, pure Muhammadan Islam. And this is exactly what he did. In response to a conversation in which this usurpation and this greed of the political establishment of the Abbasids was being spoken about, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam gives a very beautiful response and an answer where His Eminence says that whenever the blessings of Allah are plentiful to someone, the needs of the people around him start to become great. And one who does not undertake this responsibility, this will cause those blessings to disappear. So here again, we find that in an environment where people are becoming poor, and a very small handful of people who have political power and are able to bully other peoples are becoming richer. And of course, in between all of this economic and financial corruption, the common masses are hurting and the common masses are suffering. And we find that in this kind of an environment, this divinely appointed imam, this guide of humanity, this leader of perfection, tells the people that if you have a certain blessing, again, whether it is power or wealth or status or influence, you must use this blessing which has been given to you by the Almighty Allah in order to help the people around you. And the misuse of these kind of blessings, whether it is wealth or power or status or influence or whatever it may be, the misuse of these things lead to these blessings being taken away from one in one way or the other. It might not be immediate, but eventually it will be taken away. And for example, if for some reason it isn't taken away and the individual dies, well, surely they will be judged upon this and they will be punished accordingly in the hereafter. But in our daily lives, we must realize that if Allah has blessed us with wealth or power or influence or status, then we must try our very, very best to help our fellow brother Muslims and our fellow sister Muslims all across the world. That is in reality why Allah has given us these blessings. First and foremost, these blessings are a means for a test to see if we succeed. And the second is again a test to see whether we will help others or not with that which has been given to us by the Almighty Allah. This is Dialogue. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to a shorter speech by Sheikh Ayyub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, according to what he mentioned to his companions, he said that min aklatin mana'at akalat. Subhanallah. Kam min aklatin. How many a time one meal mana'at akalat may stop you to gain and to get the moments of eating many meals. It doesn't mean literally. Kam aklatin. How many a time one food, haram food, you eat one time, mana'at akalat, will stop you to get the halal food for many years, for many times. He wants us to be aware that when we make our decisions sometimes, I want to take this job, look careful. Is it halal or haram? Because one job and that which you gain from that, if it is from haram, it may stop you to gain that halal for many years. We need to be aware of that.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
While the U.S. beats on drums of human rights violations in other countries, it has less care about the situation of women and mothers in the U.S. A new study has revealed that during pandemic, mothers in the U.S. were especially likely to report high levels of stress during the public health crisis if they experienced major disruptions to their daily lives at work, their children's schools, or in their interactions with their communities. Due to a variety of factors, researchers said mothers may be particularly susceptible to psychological stress effects from the COVID-19 pandemic. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote in this regard, a study by the National Institute of Health in the first 16 months of the coronavirus pandemic found that mothers in the U.S. were especially likely to report high levels of stress during the public health crisis if they experienced major disruptions to their daily lives at work, their children's schools, or in their interactions with their communities, as the majority of people surveyed said they did. The NIH Environmental Influences on Child Health Outcomes, ECHO program, surveyed more than 11,000 mothers between April 2020 and August 2021, the largest study to date regarding how mothers experienced the pandemic. More than 8,400 respondents reported that their lives had changed dramatically after the World Health Organization declared the worldwide coronavirus outbreak, a pandemic in mid-March 2020, and schools and businesses across the U.S. and the planet were forced to close, furlough or lay off workers, and shift to remote-only models, along with other sweeping changes to daily life. According to lead study author Theresa Bastain, Associate Professor of Clinical Population and Public Health Sciences at the Keck School of Medicine of University of Southern California, researchers chose to examine the effects of the pandemic on the mental health of mothers because previous research has described how they took on much of the burden caused by the pandemic-linked changes to the economy and education system. Mothers suffered a large share of the income and job losses and shouldered much of the responsibility of child care and homeschooling children, the school said in a press release. For example, Pew Research reported in October that for mothers whose youngest child was between the ages of 5 and 12, the average time they spent on secondary child care, supervising children while doing other activities such as working, increased by about 2.5 hours between 2019 and 2020, going from 5.8 hours per day to 8.2 hours. For fathers, this type of child care increased by 1.2 hours between 2019 and 2020. In September 2020, Pew also reported that mothers were more than three times as likely as fathers to have lost their jobs in the first months of the pandemic. Mothers may be particularly susceptible to psychological stress effects from COVID-19 pandemic, reads the new study, which was published recently in JAMA Network Open. School closures impact working mothers, leading to loss of income and complementary meals in school settings, unexpected child care expenses, and gaps in adequate technology and quiet space for remote learning. The study continues. It is critical to understand the associations between pandemic hardships and mental health of U.S. mothers. The researchers questioned mothers about how much their daily lives changed as a result of the pandemic, particularly about whether they began working remotely, became more isolated due to social distancing guidelines, had less access to healthcare, or got less physical exercise. They also asked respondents if they had shown signs of acute stress disorder, defined as symptoms that arise after or during an event that threatens one's life or the life of a person's loved ones, including anxiety, negative moods, disassociation, avoidance, and sleepiness. Mothers who reported high levels of pandemic-related disruptions were more likely to report such symptoms, according to the study. It really came down to change, and those mothers whose lives carried on much as they normally had did not report as much stress, said Bastian, adding it was the mothers who had big disruptions who reported the higher levels of stress. Although low-income people and communities of color bore the brunt of the pandemic in numerous ways, with studies showing that Black Americans were more likely to be hospitalized for COVID-19 infections and that socioeconomic factors were linked to the increased odds that Black and Hispanic people test positive for the disease, the study published recently showed that mothers with incomes that were higher than $30,000 were more likely to show signs of stress. The high change cluster contained 8,412 mothers and was characterized by higher incomes, higher education, and higher cohabitation. The high change cluster was more likely to report financial concerns as a source of stress. 3,008 participants, about 35.76% versus 925 participants, about 30.22%, and had a higher proportion of white mothers. 5,539 participants, 65.85% versus 1,656 participants, 54.10%. Both clusters had similar distributions of Latina and Hispanic participants. Lower-income people who were surveyed were more likely to have jobs in which they did not have the ability to work remotely, noted the researchers, putting them at greater risk for infection. However, along with the privilege of working remotely and being able to quarantine away from other household members, considerable disruption in day-to-day life was also experienced in the high-change cluster, including greater social isolation from family, friends, and colleagues, who are important sources of social support when confronted with a major traumatic life event, reads the study, adding, a surprisingly result was that mothers in the low-change cluster reported high post-traumatic stress when they spent more time with family. Spending greater time with family might be stressful for mothers with lower socioeconomic advantage, the study continues, especially if they reside in smaller homes where they may be unable to quarantine away from family members. For mothers across socioeconomic and racial groups, the study shows that we need to think about traumatic experiences like natural disasters, pandemics, or mass shootings more historically. There is a wide range of hardships that women experience from these events that we need to understand, the expert said, adding, so we can protect people from long-term effects.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith which has been transmitted from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. This hadith is about the person who refrains from fulfilling the need and the request of his brother in faith. As you know, none of us are completely self-sufficient. All of us have needs. And this is one of the reasons why human beings came together in the first place and formed societies, because no person can fulfill all of his needs on his own. You know, there has to be somebody who, you know, makes bread. There has to be somebody who, you know, sews the clothes. There has to be somebody who takes care of the government. You know, there has to be this distribution of labor, right, so that all of the needs of every human being can be fulfilled and secured, right? And, you know, in normal situation, you know, this is, these needs, we fulfill our needs through monetary means. You know, for example, you want a piece of bread, you go to the bread maker, you pay him the money, he gives you the bread. But what happens, you know, but at the same time, we know that, you know, a lot of times it's not that simple. You know, there is poverty in society, there is illness in society. A lot of people don't have those means to secure the needs that they have. So, you know, as human beings who live in society, you know, in order to kind of fulfill this whole, the whole purpose and rationale of society, we have to help one another secure one another's needs. Let's look at this beautiful hadith from Imam Baqir alayhi salam and see what the Imam said about this matter. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, "Whichever Muslim comes to another Muslim's house to visit or to seek a need and asks permission to enter, but he does not come out to meet him." Right, so let's say that, you know, somebody comes to your house and he rings the doorbell and, you know, you ask him from behind the door, you know, "What purpose have you, do you have, you know, for coming to meet me?" And he says, "Oh, I needed some help with regards to something, or I just came to visit you," but you do not let him in. He said, "No, I'm busy," or, you know, "I'll come back another time." In this case, the Imam says, "The curse of Allah will continuously be upon that Muslim host until they meet again," right? You know, so until that person comes back later on and this person doesn't allow him to come inside, allows him to come inside, until that time, you know, Allah will continuously curse this person and, you know, his situation will not be very good and prosperous. Right, so it behooves us, and it's we should, you know, help one another in, you know, the very needs that we have. And this not necessarily means that, you know, if somebody has something, you know, and needs some money, we give him a loan or something. It could be so simple as, you know, let's say that your friend, right, he gets a flat tire and he says, "Hey, can you come out and help me change my tire?" You go out and help him, you get some sawab. So we should think in broader terms with respect to this topic. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the result and consequences of not fulfilling the needs of another brother in faith. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.